And I think, yeah, I couldn't touch it. So I wasn't allowed to touch it. And only when he got his second computer, I got the old one. And then I started moving because his was connected to the internet and mine wasn't. I was moving stuff over with diskettes. I think that's a correct English word, to just move that stuff over that I downloaded on his computer and then just put it on mine. Like computer games and software, etc., and always fiddling with trying to fit stuff on site on that 3 megabytes was quite a challenge. Kept me busy for many hours.
And that's Thomas Thunin, head of commerce at Forward. And I'm Julian Duque, your host for the Salesforce Developer Podcast. And here in the podcast, we share stories and insights from developers for developers. Today, we are going to talk with Thomas about B2C Commerce Cloud. But before, we will start just as we left off, and we often do, with his early year.
I think my first experience with a computer was when I was around 8, 9, I believe, when my father first bought a computer with Windows 3.11, if I'm not mistaken.
3.11, yeah, that's...
Yeah.
That's quite the journey into the memory lane for me.
And I think, yeah, I couldn't touch it. So I wasn't allowed to touch it. And only when he got his second computer, I got the old one. And then I started moving because his was connected to the internet and mine wasn't. I was moving stuff over with diskettes. I think that's a correct English word, to just move that stuff over that I downloaded on his computer and then just put it on mine. Like computer games and software, etc., and always fiddling with trying to fit stuff on site on that 3 megabytes was quite a challenge. Kept me busy for many hours.
And what were the things you were moving, like mostly games, or what were the things you were downloading back in the days?
Anything that I found interesting, software, but a lot of games, like computer games that I found on the internet. Probably not the safest way, probably some viruses that were part of those programs. But yeah, I think that was the biggest chunk, like computer games, and not so much anything with working on the computer. I think that was also the time that I was still fiddling inside of the cases of the computer rather than working with the software. And that changed at a later stage in my life.
Oh, nice. I didn't touch like the internals or the hardware until I was like now an adult, because I didn't want to, you know, damage the computer we had at home. It was a very precious thing to start like fiddling with it.
Yeah, there was the second computer, so it gave me a little bit of freedom, but again, I tried to make sure that I didn't destroy the computer because it was the only one I had. But yeah. But that changed at a later stage. Like now I just want the device to work and that the software on it runs so I can, well, develop.
And then I imagine you were able to have internet in your own computer later.
Yeah, but that took a long while. I think while it was still dial-up, my father kept a strict access because it cost a lot of money to be connected to the internet. And if you left the connection on and you couldn't call while you were connected to the internet, etc. So I didn't really get a lot of time. Only when broadband, I think, was it in 2000 or was it a little bit earlier? I'm not really sure again. But once there was broadband, no real restriction on the connection, just on the amount of data that you downloaded. That's when I got a connection of my own. Although I really had to monitor what I was doing on the internet, because I think it was like 500 megabytes at the start per month, then a gigabyte. And I think for a long time was very low. So you continuously had to monitor because they would shut down the internet if you reached that limit. It would come to a crawl and the internet would become unusable. And my father would yell at me if I got the internet to come to a crawl.
We don't want that. We don't want that. I remember those days. I think I had just 1 hour a day for internet purposes. Then when, yeah, broadband came in, you start like kind of like forgetting about the limits. You know, right now we are 100% connected and we don't have like much bandwidth limits. So we don't think about that. But back in the days, it was a way different story.
Oh, yeah. I think now on a monthly basis, it's half a terabyte that goes through for, if you look at Netflix or downloading PlayStation updates for games or downloading, it's like 100 gigabytes in one file. So if you look at compared to the 90s, it's huge, the amount of difference of data that you're pushing through. Compared to then, you had to watch out, oh, it's 10 megabytes in size, I need to watch out for to be able to get enough bandwidth to come for, well, get through the month.
Yeah, oh my god, that's so great. And how you got into coding, it was something also from a young age, or this came later?
It came actually at a later stage. I started with my computer, I think when I got it, it was usually just games and playing around. And until I was, I think, 15, 16, I actually wasn't interested in development at all. I wanted to become an accountant.
Accountant?
An accountant, yes. The only problem was after 2-3 years of studying, I figured that I didn't like accounting and also didn't like working with numbers. So that's, yeah, quite annoying if you want to become an accountant, which is basically only working with numbers and working with financials. So I had to make a big change when I was 16, and I completely switched my studies and went to, well, computer science, because a few years before I was creating some websites, I was the go-to person. Like if a computer was running slow or was filled with viruses, I would go to people's houses and for a small amount of money, I would clean it up. Even didn't matter how bad it was, because I saw a lot of bad things. I mean, I was surprised that even some of these computers were still running with the amount of viruses that were installed. You'd get pop-ups every 5 seconds. If you open a website, you would get extra ads. I mean, it was pretty bad in a lot of cases. And I figured maybe I can do something with that. And I did a test for, well, applying to that degree. I'm not sure if I can call it a degree yet. And I failed the development part, but I did pass all of the rest. So they allowed me to join. And that's where I really started learning development of and really fell in love with being able to create things. I was not the best of student. I think my grades were always just above the passing grade, even in development, but I still loved creating stuff, just not the things that I got assigned to me as projects. So I found my own way and, well, really moved around in development languages.
Nice. And what was your first language?
I think the first one was C.
C?
Yeah, okay. That was the first development, then C Sharp, because the teacher we had was from a Microsoft background. So C Sharp was the second one. Never went to Visual Basic, luckily, went to C Sharp. And after that, some PHP. And then at the end, I ended up with Java before getting my first, well, work experience.
Oh, tell me about that first work experience. How was it?
Well, I'm actually still at my first job. I dove into commerce. So my first work experience was Intershop, which is a different product from BDC Commerce Cloud from Salesforce, but still has a similar, well, background because it's from the same company. They just split ways at one point. And that was a peculiar way of doing Java development. It was more of a visual experience. You created a pipeline, as they call it, which visually represents the flow of your request. Like you have a start node, which is your URL, and then you start dragging in blocks of, well, pieces of code like get product, update product, delete product. So basically, actually, what looks like flow, just in a very retro 90s view inside of your IDE. And that's how I learned to work in an enterprise level. Because before I was just fiddling around, I had a lot of open source projects in C Sharp. I also did a lot of things with Windows Phone that never really lift off because there were no applications. And I built a few apps myself because, well, there was a gap and I wanted a few apps on my Windows Phone, and I built those too. And that really helped with the enterprise level of Java. I mean, C Sharp and Java is not the same, but there's a lot of similarities in the development.
Yeah, is the Windows Phone applications, they used HTML and CSS for the UI. Is that one or I'm confused?
No. That was C Sharp all the way. Like if you look at HTML, CSS, I think that's Cordova, which I also did for a while. So I really moved around in different development languages, see what I liked, what I didn't like. But I ended up with Java, did that for 7 years, like working with those pipelines, like in a visual way, but building all of the blocks yourself. And yeah, that was the back end, and the front end was HTML, CSS, and then just moving that with the way that technology moved around.
Nice. And you are still doing Commerce Cloud, but with different technologies.
Yeah. So after Intershop, I think it was 2017, we were looking to expand because I work for a company that is part of a bigger group, and each company has its own specialization. And we were looking into Demandware at the time. But they told us, well, it's similar kind of development that Intershop. The still pipelines, only the blocks are built out of JavaScript instead of Java. So that's what really pushed us to say, okay, let's investigate, see what options are there. And halfway through the negotiations, well, Demandware was acquired by Salesforce. So hello, Salesforce. And when we became an official partner, it was already part of the, well, Salesforce ecosystem, but really on the edge of what it is. And I started developing there, moving away from pipelines purely into JavaScript development, because that's the way it is with BDC Commerce Cloud.
Oh, nice. And if I understand right now, you build a site on B2C Commerce Cloud also using JavaScript, right?
Yeah. So the backend runs completely on a Rhino engine. So it translates JavaScript to Java. So behind the scenes, it's still a Java platform. But mm-hmm. we, as developers, talk to it with JavaScript. And the front end before was HTML with jQuery. But since 2019 or 20, there was another acquisition by Salesforce of Mobify, and that was a React front end heading into headless, well, providing a solution because the e-commerce community in general on all platforms was heading towards a headless / composable architecture. And that was Salesforce's way of finding a solution towards that headless instead of, well, as they call it, a monolithic solution where the front end and the back end just runs on the same engine. And removing the head from the body, and that would be React, so a completely different language than what we're used to in Salesforce. There's no Apex, there's no Lightning Web Components, it's completely separate.
Yeah. Do you know why it's React instead of LWC? Why?
I don't know.
That decision was made or no?
I think because the acquisition, the platform was built on React. And changing a complete language from React to Lightning Web Components is probably quite the endeavor, especially since the platform was already up and running in a way. Then they, well, put a Salesforce flavor on top of it. But changing the development language was probably too much of an effort. But again, I don't know what the reason was, but because of the acquisition had probably a big say in why it would become React.
Yeah, this is more like a question for a PM, of course. But personally, I like that. I think the more options folks have to build applications on Salesforce, I think it's better. Especially with React, you have a lot of control and a huge ecosystem also of different libraries that you can use to build a site. How has been that experience for you? Do you consider right now also a React developer, or do you have the React skills, or just focus on the commerce side of things?
Yeah, so the past 3 years, I've gone through a, well, personal transition from going from a developer, well, so at that time, a technical lead on projects to an architect, which meant a lot less development and more telling other people how to start building things and how to connect all of the dots together. And that was when, well, React wasn't really in the picture just yet. And well, once that started happening, my developer senses started to tingle a little bit again. So I wanted to get to know what's this new platform, etc. So even though in my current position as a architect and head of commerce, I'm more inside of a management position, hovering over all of the different projects that people are doing. One of my tasks is also supporting our entire development team with questions because, well, I know a lot about the platform. I've been doing it now for 5 years. I'm also the, well, one of the teachers of the ARC 300 Trailhead Academy course, where I teach architecture of, well, specifically to B2C Commerce Cloud. How do you put a site live going from the analysis phase until the go live? How do you do hypercare right after, etc.? And to, well, provide that knowledge to everyone within my team. And that also means that I need to stay up to date with what's going on in development, because we personally, we have made a switch to the PWA Kit, which is the headless storefront of B2C Commerce Cloud that I talked about earlier in React. But that also means that I am forced to learn React, because otherwise, at one point, I will not be able to answer all of those questions. And there's a lot of, well, it's a completely different thing, React. It's not just jQuery and HTML. No, you're doing everything in JavaScript. It has a, like you said, a huge third-party library of components, and all of them have their pros and cons and their specific way of working. And that is something that I need to look into as well to understand what those pros and cons are, to make decisions and help others understand what the effects are of those decisions. And that is why I try to do some React development when I have the time. I did Udemy courses 2 years ago. I started doing some side projects, fiddle around with React, what can be done. And at one point, I think it started in January last year with the entire AI, generative AI boom. I figured, hey, there's some stuff that we can do with B2C Commerce Cloud. I want to do that in the administrative console that B2C Commerce Cloud has. Let's do it in React so that I can fiddle around, still do some, well, useful projects that we can help our customers with, but also learn React and reiterate. I mean, I think the project that I'm talking about, I think I rebooted it 4 times, like figuring out something new and then saying, oh, well, now I have to change all my files because this is an entirely better way of working that I've been doing for the past few months. Okay, those 100 files, well, I know what to do for the next coming 2 weeks and refactor the entire thing to work better. I think that one was React Query. I did all of my API calls in a different way, and then I found the wonderful library called React Query, which changed 20, 30 lines of code into 2 lines of code.
Oh.
Which I liked a lot because it made my code a lot more readable. But that also meant that I had to rework my entire API layer, which is fun in its own way. I mean, that's how you learn. You learn new things and you decide for yourself, okay, this is a better way of working.
Yeah.
I know it's a lot of work.
A whole iterative process, of course.
Yeah. And that's how I've been learning React for the past year, is building my own framework for the business manager in Commerce Cloud. And, well, I like doing useful things when I'm learning. If you have a Udemy course, you can do the exercises, but usually I don't do the exercises and I start building my own application and translating those exercises into my own application, so that at the end, after the course is done, I have something that makes my life easier. Maybe I learned something new because of that. But again, in a management role, technically, I'm not developing on any project. So that allows me to spend some time looking for innovative ways to apply this technology in the way of working for all of the projects that we have.
Nice. Speaking of innovation, tell me a little bit more about that AI aspect. How are you leveraging generative AI in the solution you are building?
Yeah, so the framework that I built was to make it easier to build other modules within the business manager, the administrative console. And I used that to build a module to easily implement AI in any aspect that you have. Like whatever data you have, you can use AI. If we're talking about product data, you have SEO that's important. And generally, titles, descriptions, etc. are not provided by an external system. And you need to figure out a way to get those into the front end And AI is very good, at least generative AI is very good at summarization. So you have a product description, and we built a module that basically takes all of the data that we have from the product and say, hey, give me an SEO optimized title and description for each product so that we have something that is according to all the rules that Google and every other search engine gives us, to have that optimized automatically, either with manual verification or in batch. And also for Page Designer, which is the CMS that's built in, the content management system that's built into B2C Commerce Cloud, to have generative aspects, like you have a text component and you want to generate some content to give you some ideas, like any CMS is doing, to automatically generate some content that will inspire you to write your own thing, but you do not have to start from scratch. Also with image generation is also something that we've played in, but that is a lot harder to do in a commerce setting. Like, you're not going to automatically generate product images out of nothing. So there's a lot of applications for AI, and we built a prompt management tool to generate your prompts, test them out, do some system management, make sure that the data is passed correctly to get the best possible output from the generative AI, because it likes to hallucinate, as they call it, and put a layer in front of it within B2C Commerce Cloud until Einstein GPT is available on the platform, which I think is next year, which will then take the orchestration layer responsibility and just put it in front and say, okay, here's the base of using AI in B2C Commerce Cloud, and now we can use it in for content, for product data, and possibly other things that would take a lot of manual work, maybe translations or taking in reports for search terms, the ones that give results, the ones that do not give results, and try to find synonyms, match them up so that we can automatically configure the search engine to respond better, but not having to do, well, the manual task of looking at 3,000 words and matching them yourself, when a generative AI can do that in seconds.
This is so fascinating and powerful. This framework that you're building is an open source project, or is a product you are working on right now?
So right now it's a product that we have built just for, well, our own accelerator for the front end. So the headless component to make management easier. But we are thinking about looking for ways to open source it. We're talking to Salesforce about this and hoping that we can find some way to make this open source for the entire community, because this was built on company time, which means that it's not mine to give open source. So, but again, when you're building a framework like this, you also need to do security audits. You need to be compliant for accessibility, etc. And Salesforce has all of those resources available. We're a company from Belgium. Yep. We're 75 to 100 people strong. We have capabilities, we have knowledge, but we do not have a dedicated security team that will find things that Salesforce would find for. I mean, you have a lot more specialized people within Salesforce than we will ever have. And having
even a dedicated open source team as well.
Yeah. So having eyes on it, and also from a Salesforce perspective to improve the solution, is also very interesting to me, because we have our vision as a partner, but maybe Salesforce has different views and also sees different opportunities that we can combine to make it even, well, better for everyone around the world.
Wow, this is fascinating. I love seeing how fast a lot of companies are starting to adopt AI into their own solutions, just beyond the plain text generation, but finding more creative ways of relying on this technology to improve workflows, to make sure people using your products are going to be way more productive. And this seems to be the case.
And also coding. It really helped me with my journey in React. I use GitHub Copilot, which is giving, let's say, 80% of the cases good suggestions and 20% some doubtful suggestions, but it really helped me on my learning journey and also sped up the creation of all of these modules. If you look at unit tests, the basic unit test, it's really good at generating for you if you already have three or five unit tests written out and you need to check five more parameters of your function, it will just generate it for you. And 95% of the work is already done that would have taken you 30 minutes to do yourself will now take 5 minutes for 10 unitists, so to speak.
Yeah. That's something I always struggle with, which is unit testing. I mostly create happy path tests, but with Copilot, I've been also using it for the other paths, and it's definitely a great tool.
Yeah, I've been using it now for a year and a half, and the only downside to using such a tool is once the internet drops or it stops responding, it's like, oh, I have to type it myself now. Oh, no. Okay.
Why this is not autocompleting?
Yeah. Where's my autocomplete of complete functions? Why I have to write this function myself now? No, I mean, if we're looking at a complete lines of code, it's very well, but generating complete functions out of nowhere, I mean, that needs some review in most of the cases. Like, it's good suggestions that you're doing here, but I'm going to do it differently because I don't agree with what you're doing based on your hive mind that you've created.
It's also a great thing to steal these needs, the human in the loop. It needs us. Automatically, it's not going to solve all the problem for us. We still need to have the skills to make sure everything that the AI is giving us is valid, is accurate, and it fits the purpose that we need.
Yeah. I mean, I treat it like a junior developer that's helping me, like pair programming, like the junior's writing the code and I'm looking over the shoulder. Like, what are you generating here? Okay, that seems valid, but I'm just going to check myself that this is really up to snuff to what I'm expecting it to do. I think that's really important. Like with generative AI right now, it's at a junior level, slowly improving. I mean, I'm really excited to see what it's going to do in the next few years. If you look at the differences between GPT-3 and 4, I'm really wondering what 5 is going to look like because the difference is huge. But with React development, it's really helped me to quickly build things based on what I've already done. And yeah, that's how I've been using AI from a developer perspective anyways.
Nice. Very interesting and accurate analogy, seeing AI as a junior developer for these cases. I didn't talk about that. Nice. Well, I know, because you told me offline, that you are the only B2C cloud golden hoodie out there in the community.
Yeah, that's a wonderful experience from 2022 at Connections. Because, I mean, if you look at the B2C Commerce Cloud community as an acquisition, for the first few years, we had our own exchange. Like, we weren't on Trailhead. There were no modules over there. We were not on the help side. We were quite separate from the community. We had our own way of communicating with the community, let's say. And the entire Salesforce ecosystem was not something that we felt part of until I think 2 years ago when Salesforce was really starting to move over a lot of the, I think our own community was moved over to Trailhead. We had our unofficial Slack that was becoming a lot more popular, allowing people to communicate. And a lot more products were being added under the Commerce Cloud wing. Before it was just B2C Commerce Cloud, and now we have B2B on Lightning, we have order management. At one point there was Itonet, but I don't think that's a thing anymore. We have Loyalty Cloud, I think that's under the marketing wing, but a lot more products joined the fray, and that meant there was also a marketing department within Salesforce specifically starting to focus on getting the community together. And I'm really thankful for Amalia that for all that she's done to get the community of Commerce Cloud together and helping us to really try to fit in the whole big Salesforce picture. Like if you look at at community events, we're at a lot about core and marketing cloud, but for B2C Commerce Cloud, since we're so different in ways of development, everything is completely different way of working where there's no apex, there's no flow. And she's really been working on getting us involved and also advertising our unofficial community, which is about 10,000 people strong now in Slack.
10,000.
Well, I think we have about 2,000 people really active, but the total members count is heading towards 11,000, which is great. And because of that involvement and also getting our spot I was noticed because I was blogging. Well, during COVID, I got a lot of time on my hands, as a lot of people did, and we were only allowed to walk outside, which you can do for a few hours, but you still got a lot of free time on your hands. I started blogging about BTC Commerce Cloud, my experiences, writing guides on how to do specific use cases, because the documentation was very scattered and you had to combine a few pages to go implement something specifically. And I started writing about how to do these things, what you had to look out for with the experience that I gained over the past few years in generally commerce and also in BTC Commerce Cloud. And it also gave me, well, a little bit of a spotlight, I guess, within the community. And because of those efforts, I was, well, invited to Connections to speak at the keynote to tell my story about, well, how I got into the community, my contributions. And at the end, I got my golden hoodie, which was a very big surprise that I was not expecting.
Nice.
But I'm really hoping that someone can join me at one point within the Commerce Cloud community so that we can, well, get a bigger place in the entirety of what Salesforce is, because it's a huge ecosystem. But I think if you look at the diagram of percentage, we're like 6 or 3% of the entire ecosystem of Salesforce, which is not a lot. So we have a lot of space to gain, but it's a mm-hmm. long road ahead comparing to what the other clouds within Salesforce provide as a community.
And this is why mostly we are talking right now, is to raise awareness about this community. And we will make sure to share the link to the Slack community as well in the show notes. And if your blog post as well is active, we would like to have it there as well.
Yeah, perfect.
Awesome. Thomas, this has been an amazing conversation. While you are not obviously building this framework for Commerce Cloud or working with the Commerce Cloud community, what do you do for a hobby or in your spare time?
So in my spare time, my kids take a lot of my time.
I imagine.
Yeah, I have two children, 2 and 4. They really keep me busy. But besides that, I'm also part of a theater group, which I joined when I got to know my wife. She is on the stage, and I make sure that everything on the stage is all right. I also took ownership of the website, of course. That would have been odd not to. And I just make sure that lighting, sound, make sure that the stage is okay. And during the plays, I walk around carrying, well, drinks and food to the people that are enjoying the show while my wife is up there, and I do not want to be there. So that's why I hide in.
You're just the stage manager.
Yeah, I make sure that everything's okay and I'm not in the spotlight, and make sure that the people in the spotlight, that everything runs smoothly. And before COVID happened, I did a lot of evening classes, chocolate, electrician, I think also cookie baking. I did a lot of stuff.
That sounds good. And I heard that you're also a designer for ShirtForce.
Yeah, and that's also now. I think I joined ShirtForce when I was looking for a way when the war in Ukraine happened. Mm-hmm. I was looking for ways to help, but I didn't want to start a new, well, something new. And I looked for ways that I could help. And that's when I stumbled on ShirtForce, which is becoming a lot more popular than it was 2-3 years ago. I think it's getting a lot of traction. And I figured, oh, let's make some designs for BTC Commerce Cloud. It's all about core, and I see Apex shirts and Flow, etc. But there's nothing for BTC Commerce Cloud. Let's try to get some designs going for that community and use those, well, profits that ShirtForce brings in and donate to a nonprofit of choice. Like, I think every 4 months, a new target is chosen for the donation. And, well, it seemed like the perfect choice. I mean, it's not just a one-time thing. It's something that continuously gives. You design a shirt, people wear it, hopefully, buy those shirts, and all the profits will go to, well, nonprofit of choice for those 4 months. And that's where we pushed for, well, the Ukraine for those first 4 months. And afterwards, I mean, there's a lot of causes that could use funding, And this is a good permanent way to help people around the world too.
Nice. That's beautiful to hear. Well, Thomas, thank you very much for everything you do and for joining us here on the Salesforce Developer Podcast.
Thank you for having me. It's been great.
And if you want to learn more about this show, head on to developer.salesforce.com/podcast, when you can hear all the episodes and read the show notes. Thank you, everybody, and talk to you the next time.